You're listening to The Dream Dealer's Daughter, written and read to you by Emily McCumber. Support the show by subscribing on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and if you can, please rate and review the show as well. This really helps me out. Thanks. This is Chapter 11, The Red Envelope. Nargis greets Anhouse as she steps into the foyer. The floor shifts in response, and a warm sensation wraps around her. Largo isn't in, but his air lingers. Not all airs are visible, but when viewed through Lilia's eyes, Largo's illustrates as a murky yellow. And on this night, Anhouse is all yellow. With a sigh, Nargis begins the climb to the second floor. Edgar, a consistent client, loved his late pear tea's perfume. In Edgar's memories of his pear tea, Nargis learned how scents linger in spaces long after the immediate source has left. She likes to think thoughts and airs have the same effect, and so must Largo, as he tends to leave messages in his residual air. She draws a tentative amount of Largo's foggy air within, and waits for his message to reveal itself. It arrives when she reaches the top of the stairs. Largo reminds her that Alana is taking care of her clients until further notice. It is time for you to relax, dearest daughter. We need you calm before your embodiment. I've invited our most trusted allies and friends to the post-ceremony party. Lionel tells me you wish for the event to be in physical form, not dream. Charlotte will be at Anhouse by Friday morning to prepare. But in the meantime, Lionel has convinced me to let him take you shopping to get all the necessary clothes for your body. I've left what money you'll need with him. The overall message isn't unpleasant, but Largo's presence slithers through Nargis's thoughts, overstaying its welcome. Largo still doubts her, is searching for proof she has lied in some form regarding Elodie and Markwell. She lets his air run its course till it fades like perfume from a room. A song echoes from down the hall. Waterloo Sunset by the Kinks fades into the crackle of the record player. Nargis shakes Largo's remaining presence from her immediate mind and slides a smile into place for Lionel's sake. She always knows when Lionel is in. He's not a quiet person. When he laughs, it echoes, and if he's cooking, he's dancing, shifting the floorboards to a joyful rhythm. She steps into the den, lets her senses rake over the scene before her. Lionel sits on the floor. Scattered around him are visions of party settings and potential outfits. "What's all this?" she asks. Lionel smiles with his entire being, like his happiness can't be contained. It radiates into the awareness of anyone nearby. "Nargis." It's hour two of their planning, and things are considerably less exciting than she expected. A mind named Charlotte plans all of Largo's events, organizes the guest list, dreams the settings and decorations. Whether the party takes place in a physical variance or in a dream in the all-time, Charlotte handles everything. But Lionel is focused on planning what Nargis's first few post-embodiment days will look like. What she'll do first, what her first meal will be, and so on. She is having fun, at least she likes to think she is, because sweet Lionel is taking the time to try and make this special. For years, Nargis has collected her tokens, snippets of her clients' lives that she hoped to experience for herself when she finally embodied. But now that embodiment is within reach, it somehow feels even further away. Feels impossible. "Call me crazy, but I thought you'd, I don't know, actually enjoy planning this." "I am excited," she replies. "It just seems a little unreal," he cuts in. "Every year when I've reached this point, when I'm a day away from the embodiment, something goes wrong."
"With Largo, you mean?"
"Yes, Largo. Who else?" He rolls his eyes. "I don't have to plan any weird dinners for Largo and his strange guests for 2 whole days. I get to spend time with you, and I don't want to waste any of it. So stop being negative. This year is going to be different. This year it's going to work." Lionel's right. She may not be proud of what she's done to get here, but it's not like she can dream Elodie or Markwell back into existence. She takes hold of Lionel's hand. He's 25, and unlike most of the minded employed by Largo, Lionel was born into the body he currently possesses. He has parents, sisters, and friends. He has a life. Works here for the pay, or so he claims. Like his sisters, he is fully minded, but born with the prior genetics of the bodies his parents took over when they relocated to this time. He has white skin, long legs he doesn't always know how to control, and angular features that belong in ancient paintings. But the best thing about him is that he's no one but himself. Today, he wears corduroy overalls with one hook undone and a black turtleneck. He pushes up the large glasses currently drooping down his nose, and when he catches her staring, he blushes. Lionel is like chocolate. He always makes everything better. She's never had chocolate, of course. But apparently, this is a thing that's said. She smiles with her entire air, ready to take me embodiment shopping? They're at what Lionel tells her is a mall, to get clothes and all the other things she'll need once she has a body. Needing things is something that comes with a physical form. That's what Largo says anyways, but Nargis is wanted for things and experiences her entire existence. It's late morning in this variance, and it's a weekday, so Lionel promises it won't be packed with tourists or locals. After stocking up on what he calls the basic necessities, he leads her to a diner where they take a break and discuss her future body. So the Priors don't hear, they hold their conversation in thought. Lionel is skilled at not looking like he's talking to a mind. He may know she's here, but not many others will. And unlike Clark, he does care if these strangers think he's crazy for talking to nothing. Because to these Priors, Nargis is exactly that. Nothing. She says, "I want to have the option of becoming old, but I don't want to be old right now." The body isn't like ancient or anything. It's 27, only 2 years older than me. And being in your 20s isn't bad. I mean, sure, it's full of the occasional existential dread. But other than that, Lionel shrugs and trails off. Sarcasm is her first instinct. But when Nargis looks at Lionel's life, he's not wrong. "Look," he adds, "you'll still be 18 even though your body is older. Besides, when you're a teenager, everyone tells you who and how to be. Maybe this body's age will give you more freedom." As long as I'm dreaming for Largo, I'll be told how and who to be, regardless of the age of my mind or body. He's quiet for a while. She watches him take a bite of a greasy burger slathered in ketchup. For the millionth time, she wonders what the appeal is. Food in general, having to eat and drink water, will be a weird adjustment. He says, "I didn't get it at first, why you wanted to throw a physical party at On House, instead of having Charlotte design a dream. But you want the parties you've seen in others' memories, don't you?" Nargis searches the diner, finds a group of friends packed in a booth near the main door. Sunshine streams in on them while they laugh. "That's what I want. Friends, I'm your friend. My friends will be your friends too when they can finally see you. I want..." She struggles to organize her thoughts into something Lionel will understand. "I want experiences of my own. Friends and things outside of work and dreaming. And you can have them, at any age, in any variance. All I'm saying is, you shouldn't focus so much on what you don't have. Focus on what you do. And what do I have, really though, Lionel? A debt I didn't ask for? I'm already indebted to Largo. Now that he's giving me a body, I'll owe him for my entire lives. And if I mess up or anger him, he could take that body away. I want to experience the simple moments people don't realize are important while living them. And that right there," she points to the group of friends, "is an important moment. I just want to live." She can feel it. He wants to argue that she is alive right now. She does have a lot to be grateful for, but there's this void in her, this ache for moments she's only experienced through others' memories. And yeah, what she wants could end up being mediocre, but it's the not knowing that has her feeling so lost. What Lionel doesn't understand, and she doesn't feel like trying to make him understand, is that her want to experience life through a physical form is as equal and strong as instinct. Lionel doesn't grasp how special a so-called boring life is. Some days, she's aware that maybe she can't grasp how complex life lived in a body actually is. But today is not one of them. She and Lionel have an unspoken agreement to keep things light, to brighten, not bring down each other's lives. This conversation calls for a rare break in their routine. The words feel choppy, but Nargis sends the thought and lets Lionel make of her truth what he wishes. "Most-minded, look at me and think I can go anywhere, do anything, learn anything I want, when I want. But there's not much holding me together. I feel it all the time, the verge of drift. And there's no way for me to know if this is the only me. When Largo found me, I was practically a fragment of an existence, so the chance that there's another version of me is slim. If I don't survive, most likely I'll go by descending into nothingness. And I've always been told that I must be remembered by as many minds as possible.
to stay present, but I'm starting to think, what's the point of it all? Nargis, no. Hear me out, and stop looking at me. You'll scare the priors. Lionel casts his gaze back to his plate. Most-minded don't even explore the all-time anymore. They exist within time, but don't travel it. Why? Because if they have a body, they are a target. But there's a healer who owns a dream shop in the City of Mines, who hasn't had a body in 30 years. She doesn't travel the all-time, just sells her tinctures in her shop. I went to her once on an assignment for Largo, and it occurred to me that maybe if I stayed in one place, I wouldn't drift. That maybe I'm not dreaming to stay alive, and instead, I'm being remembered by these people so I can continue dreaming for Largo. I don't understand. Nargis says, you didn't know me before I began dreaming for hire. Lionel looks unnerved by the direction she's leading their conversation. What was supposed to be a fun trip has turned into this. He doesn't interrupt her, though. He lets her say her whole piece and keeps his eye on her even though his eyes wander. I don't really know how old I am. Largo claims I had a childlike state of mind when he found me, so he decided I was 8. On my 13th birthday, he said I was ready to start dreaming for hire. It was supposed to give me more stability, but when I was with that healer in the City of Mines, I realized my symptoms of drift worsened after I started dreaming for Largo. What I'm trying to say is, I think dreaming does me more bad than good. But I'm not stupid. I know I'm forever indebted to Largo because he saved me. If he hadn't taken me in, I wouldn't be alive. It doesn't matter to him how many clients I dream for or how many quests I go on. I'll always owe him. Not always, right? He has to die sometime. For Lionel's sake, Nargis doesn't disagree. She thinks, the more I dream, the more minds I enter, the less I feel like an individual, and I worry someday I might not be anything at all. So I want a body, even though it will only indebt me further. I know I'll be more of a target in the all-time, but at least when I dream for others, there will be a physical time that I live my days in, that keeps me steady and reminds me who I am, where I am, because it's the in-depth study of these strangers' existences that I think will lead to me forgetting who I am. And I know I shouldn't be picky, but if I'm going to be trapped to Largo for who knows how many lifetimes, I want what I've never been able to have, a somewhat average life. But I also know I can't turn down this body. He's quiet as he mulls over her confession. I have like zero business saying this, because you always tell me to leave my job when I'm unhappy with it. But you don't have to put up with this. You could leave. I don't know how yet, but I'm sure there's some sort of option. Even though there are loads of priors about, she slides her hand into his, enjoys the roughness of his fingertips, dry and scarred from cooking. She sends into his skin her thanks because he listened. And yeah, he sounds a bit like Elder Aliso, but he didn't try and undermine what she expressed. He thinks, even if your body isn't exactly how you imagined it being, that doesn't mean you can't live the life you want. You can start by picking out whatever you want to wear for the party. Nargis shrugs, I'll wear whatever I feel like in the moment. It doesn't work like that. You have to actually shop, purchase, and put on the clothes. The sarcasm isn't necessary. Oh, it's completely necessary. Think of all the things you haven't had to do. Oh my god, you've never been hungry, sleep-deprived, or been physically sick. This is going to be so much fun. It doesn't sound like you think any of those things are fun. They aren't, he says, but watching you struggle will be. Lionel keeps his face straight, even though his air is full of laughter. She nudges him in the side, and the day carries on, no longer weighted with the reality of their earlier conversation. They wander from shop to shop, Lionel educating her on sizing and the ins and outs of what she'll need to get used to after having a body. She manages to convince him she only needs a simple outfit, and then, when she's wearing the body, they can come back and she'll try things on. The rest of their trip is filled with a softer air of fun and excitement. She drags Lionel to a place she's seen in her client's happy memories, an arcade. Nargis dreams a decent enough defense around them both, protecting them from the prying eyes of lurking scape agents and curious priors. Only once in the midst of their shopping does she think of Elodie or Markwell, but all too soon it's over and they're back at On House and she's waiting for tomorrow, lying in the den while this variance sleeps. Lionel goes home to his sisters and parents at 9 p.m, and without him, the house is too still. The den features a domed stained glass ceiling. Nargis stays busy by watching the dream that's been dreamt into the glasswork, of a clan scaling a mountain range, the sun rising behind their silhouettes. Glimpsed through the colorful glass is the true night sky of this variance. The moon shines bright and is in waning gibbous, but the stars hide behind thick clouds. At least there's An House and the distant sounds of the city to keep her company. She watches the scene above and thinks of Letty's message from Dula. What could Eugene have stolen from them? As the hours pass, her thoughts drift to Isaac. On a night like this, she'd slip into their dream and relax in the forest. Wait for him to arrive, and once he did, they'd talk till he grew tired. She hates missing him, but the fact remains. He doesn't think he has anything to be sorry for. Still, Nargis sends into the night, into the all-time and beyond, "I miss you." Who knows if it will find its way to the intended receiver, or a stray mind who ends up in her thoughts' path. Eventually, the glass ceiling burns a bright orange upon this variance's sunrise. Dreamers employed by Largo come and go, each of them greeting her before carrying on to a different part of the house. When watching the ceiling grows monotonous, she thinks into her token room and tends to the memories she keeps for others, reviews her collection of tokens, and returns rebellious dreams to their designated areas. Lionel arrives at 9 a.m. She exits her mind and greets him with a smile. He's fresh-faced, hair messy, and wearing the same clothes as yesterday. He says nothing upon sensing the state of her air, simply sits beside her on the couch and drinks his coffee. It's a calm moment, sharing the same space, him accepting her need for accompanied quiet. But as he's finishing his coffee, Lionel speaks words that shift the dynamic of the morning. "Whatever it is you're up to, I don't think it's smart." "What I'm up to? Lionel, what are you?" He retrieves a red envelope from his jacket. "This was in the mail for you." She's never received mail before, has never needed it. Her name is scrawled across the front, no postage, no address. Radiating from the envelope is a light of the past, Letty's heir. "You're this close, don't risk it. I don't know what this is. I'm not doing anything to jeopardize my embodiment." He nods to the envelope, then open it. This is the reminder she needs, that although they are friends, Lionel depends on Largo like everyone else, and she has to wonder whose side he's really on, hers or Largo's. She holds his gaze while she breaks the seal. Inside, Nargis finds a weapon she recognizes all too well, the first of the Asimago knives that killed Conrad. Like bodies, physical objects can't jump variances. Although a dream took her to Brooklyn, the apartment was a physical location. When she walked through the archway in the basement apartment in Brooklyn, the Asimago blade must have remained in Red Door variants, while her persona went elsewhere. She didn't even notice it leave the safety of her jacket. Why does Letty want her to have this? Surely this isn't what Dula wants her to kill Eugene with. Not when she couldn't transport it from this variance to Eugene's. But Lionel is waiting, and she has to present something. She digs further. Beyond the blade is a red metal card with two words engraved on the front. "Happy birthday." She holds it up to Lionel. "From one of my clients." He frowns, guilt expelling from his air. "I care about you, is all." "I know." There's a weight to the thin metal card. Magnetic, like it's trying to pull her mind somewhere. She'll have to follow its direction when Lionel isn't here. As she's tucking the envelope into her jacket, it becomes clear why, when she holds it in her hand, she can't feel or see any presence of the blade within. The envelope is a dream, as is the engraved card. The envelope dissolves first, and then the card slips into her air without permission, echoing in her mind as an ominous voice. "We'll be seeing you soon." She presses her palm to her jacket pocket. The blade remains. It's not the creaking of the front door or the sound of sure footsteps in the hall that alerts Nargis of Clark's arrival. It's the way An reacts, with a sense of anxiety, and easing into Nargis's awareness is the need to be alert, to be on edge. In the action movies Lionel has shown her, there's always a team of people dressed in black entering a scene in slow motion. Clark arrives in a similar fashion. It's all around Nargis, the truth. The plan has changed, and there Clark is, standing in the doorframe of the den. Five minds flank her. Clark's the only one presenting in a body. She wears not the face of her original self, but that of the body she operates in this time. Clark stands nearly as tall as the archway, wears an all-black suit, platform boots, and has neon yellow hair. She's striking, and her mind terrifying, because she has news. Clark speaks to the preservers first, directs them with thoughts Nargis can see but not hear. Upon Clark's demand, they disperse. Some stay in the den, weaving thoughts into the walls and floors. Others disappear upstairs. Endel is the only preserver Nargis recognizes. He often oversees the preservatory where her body is stored. When Clark sets her focus on Nargis, she braces for what's to come. There's been a change of plans, as I presume you've already guessed. This variance is no longer secure. Your embodiment will continue while Largo and others work to resecure it. There will be no party. There will be no guests. There will be no complaining. Clark steps further into the den, her heeled black boots echoing on the hardwoods. Nargis might be reading into the moment, but she swears there's a warning in those steps. Your body will be arriving soon. You will do as I say, when I say. Am I understood? Nargis rises from the couch. You're understood. Good. Clark speaks to the room. Endel, secure on's defenses, Matthias, wait at the door for the body's arrival. And Lionel? He stands. His concerns about the envelope have left his air. His fear of Clark having taken curiosity's place. But Nargis still braces for what he might say. For what his air might reveal. Yes, Clark? If you speak of this to anyone, you will be terminated. She grins. Or worse. Leave now and do not return until tomorrow. Lionel casts Nargis a long glance. He doesn't want to leave any more than she wants him to go, but she nods, encourages him to do as Clark says with a smile. He thinks to her a parting thought that's tinged with regret. Happy birthday. And hurries from the room. She isn't alone with Clark for long. The grandfather clock in the hall tells time by the moment, not minute. And it has just chimed. Her body has arrived. You've just listened to The Dream Dealer's Daughter, written and read to you by Emily McCumber. If you listen to podcasts on the regular, you know just how important reviews and ratings are. It would be awesome, fantastic, if you could subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It helps tell the algorithm, hey, this show is important. Maybe we should push it out to more listeners. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you in the next chapter. The Dream Dealer's Daughter, copyright 2022, Emily McCumber.